Good morning. It's time for the Clay County Corner, coming to you live from the historic Clay County Courthouse in Salina, Tennessee. For the next hour, the Clay County Corner will inform you of what's happening in our community. Sit back and enjoy the program.
And good morning to everyone.
All right. Good morning, everyone. I'd like to welcome everyone in here to the Clay County Corner once again at the historic Clay County Courthouse. We've got an interesting show lined up this morning. Sorry about being a few minutes late, but one of my rooms are locked up out here, and I couldn't get my guests into the green room. Trying to get hold of folks, come up and unlock my door for me. We've had to store some stuff in there for the big chili cook-off coming up here this coming weekend. So we're a few seconds late, but we'll get cranked up here just in a minute. First off, we'd like to welcome everyone here on WVFB-FM 101.5 Kicks Country, and say that we've got a great show coming up here in a few minutes. Al Westbrook is back here with us again today, and we're going to talk about how not to start a fire in certain places. So we'll get back to that just in a minute, but right now we'll take a short break, come back, and I've got a few community service announcements to make, and then we'll let Al crank up.
Hey, Clay County, Dairy Queen in Salina and Kicks Country wants to give away a free ice cream cake. That's right. You can win a delicious ice cream cake from Dairy Queen in Salina for a friend or a loved one having a birthday or anniversary. And all you have to do is call 243-5574. Call 243-5574, speak clearly, leave the name of the person having a birthday or anniversary, and the date of the birthday or anniversary. Please leave your name and number so we can call you back if we have any trouble understanding your message. Then, every Thursday between 9 and 10 a.m. on the Clay County Corner, we'll read all of the birthdays and anniversaries collected that week. We will then, at random, pull out the name that will receive that delicious ice cream cake from Dairy Queen in Salina. That number again is 243-5574. Write it down. 243-5574 to win an ice cream cake from Kicks Country and Dairy Queen in Salina.
When I grow up, I want to be a new pair of blue jeans.
When I grow up, I want to be a kid's first computer.
I want to be a warm place on a cold day.
I
want to
be a football stadium.
I want to be a bike that races around the country.
I want to be a bench on a forest trail.
When I grow up, I don't want to be a piece of garbage. And if you recycle me, I won't be.
Give your garbage another life. Recycle. Learn how at iwanttoberecycled.org. Brought to you by Keep America Beautiful and the Ad Council.
Welcome back, everyone. Once again, we're right here at the historic Clay County Courthouse, right in the middle of downtown Salina, watching the traffic go by out our window here and concentrating on a good radio show today. But before we get on with our first guest, we've got a few things listed here that are coming up in the next few weeks here in and around Salina and the Square. This coming weekend, we have our chili cook-off, which was originally scheduled for last weekend, but got washed out. And also, I think starting this weekend, our little junior pro football playoffs, we've had, you know, those coaches on talking about it. I think their playoffs are beginning, but I think they're on the road down in Trousdale County, I believe. And I believe, I know our senior boys are playing, I think, Gordonsville. And I'm not sure about the other two classifications, but I'm sure they would appreciate anyone coming out Saturday and supporting them. And then the next weekend, the 24th, and that would be on a Friday night, I believe, we have our downtown merchants are going to have a trick-or-treat here in Salina for the young folks. They're going to set up tables up and down the street here and going to have a big time that night. And then down at the community center, we've got the Christmas Bazaar coming up in November, and then in December, of course, never too early to talk about that. We've got our Mistletoe Craft Market on December the 6th, and also that day we'll have our first performance of an O. Henry Christmas, and we'll be doing that again on the 13th. So we've got all these things coming up. I'd like to invite everyone to come out to the courthouse around the square here and have a good time. Al, if you would, I know this is National Fire Prevention Week, and you've been kind of standing with us for a few days, so once again, welcome.
Good morning. This is October is Fire Prevention and Fire Safety Month.
A whole month of it.
But last week was the official Fire Prevention Week. It's based on the devastating fire that occurred in Chicago about 90 years ago. It began on the 7th, the night of October the 7th, and it burned through the city until late in the afternoon of the 9th. And one of the things that helped the Chicago Fire Department get a control of it was it began to rain quite heavily. Otherwise, historians think that it might have burned even longer. So it celebrated the second week of October. I spent time with the Salina Fire Chief and Miss Natalie Boone last week at the K-8, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, teaching fire safety to the pre-K through, I believe, the third grade. We went individually to the classroom, and then one day we had the city of Livingston brought their fire trailer that's like a miniature home, and it's kid-sized, so they can learn to escape. But one of the things I want to talk about this morning was how important it is to have smoke detectors in your home. Statistically, 3 out of 5 home fire deaths occur because they're not smoke detectors, or smoke detectors are not working because they have dead batteries or the batteries have been taken out of them. greater than 37% of all home fire deaths occur where there are no detectors whatsoever in the home. Your risk of dying in a home fire is cut in half when you start putting working smoke detectors in your home. Now, that means smoke detectors on every level of the house, especially right outside of the bedrooms. In fact, new construction in most areas of the country are required by codes to not only have smoke detectors, say, in the hallway outside of the bedrooms, the sleeping areas, but also in the bedrooms themselves. Most home fires are likely to occur while you're asleep, usually between the hours of 11 at night and 7 in the morning, and 8 out of 10 deaths occur not from getting burned by the fire itself, but from breathing the poisonous smoke. Some people think that smoke will make you cough and wake you up. And there have been stories, you know, that have been circulating around for years and years about, oh, I know somebody that the smoke made them cough and so far, and they woke up. But you need the protection of an always working smoke detector. But things are not all dreary and deadly, because there are things that you can do to protect your home by changing the smoke detector batteries at least once a year. Pick a special day, somebody's birthday, a holiday, the day that we change our clocks. You know, that's been the thing. Change your clock, change your batteries for years. If possible, replace any old detectors with new detectors. They even have new ones that are interconnected. If one detector goes off, all of the other ones that are connected, they're like Wi-Fi connected, and that will alert everyone in the home. Putting smoke detectors on each level of your house, that includes the basement, the ground floor, the second floor where a lot of people have their bedrooms, outside of the bedrooms or sleeping areas, and this month's theme is check your smoke detectors regularly, at least once a month. Press the test button to make sure that it's working. Also, you need to have a family escape route. You need to practice what we call an edith. Edith is a what, not a who, or not a person. That's escape drills in the home. Kids do it every year, two or three times during the year. They have fire drills. Well, you need to have them at home. We tell the children that they're going to be the ones to change the attitude of the adults, that we're going to get the adults to be more fire safe. But everybody that lives in the home needs to know the plan. The biggie with this plan not only is how to have two escape routes out of every room of the house, but also to have a meeting place that everybody goes to so that you can do a head count.
Hal, I know I saw the other morning, I guess on the Today Show, that they did a survey of families and asked them if they did a fire plan with their children, and I forgot, it was a tremendous percentage that had like 80, around 80-something percent that had never gone through a fire drill in their home, and they did a little mock drill, first with a real fire with no drill, and, you know, because they all thought, you know, we can get out of here, our kids know where the doors are and everything, and they didn't. And then
exactly.
They came back and did just one run through and did the same drill again, and it was amazing the difference.
Well, that's why when we're doing the fire education, fire safety education in the schools, I always tell the children that they're going to be the ones to change the adults' thinking, because it's the adults that are going to think, oh, we've never had a fire, we're not going to need to practice or even have an escape plan, and it's the children that will be the ones to change.
Yeah, we've gone through about 60 or 70 years and they never had a fire in the house, haven't we?
Exactly. So, you know, but that's why we always tell the children, you're the one that's going to be the one to have to bring this up, and you're the one that's going to have to change the attitude of the adults that you live with. The other thing that we always suggest strongly is that you have fire extinguishers in the home in areas that you can get to them easily, and also learn how to use them. At least read the instructions that come with it so that you have a general idea of how it works. The last thing you want to do is need the fire extinguisher and not know how to use it.
Okay, Al, we're going to close on that note, and I know you're coming back again next week, and
yes,
we're going to allot a little more time for you to wrap up everything. We've had a few introductory things and very important information, and we really appreciate having you here this morning.
I look forward to it.
We're proud to have someone like you here that has taken interest in these things and the fire safety, all those things throughout the county, that it's your job not just to put out a fire, but to prevent them if you can. And
absolutely.
Thanks once again for being here.
Thanks for having me.
And right now we'll take a short commercial break, and we'll be back with our second guest, Wanda Daniels from the Election Commission Office, going to be here to talk about the early voting that started yesterday and the election coming up here in November.
Good afternoon, this is Elaine Closer. We're trying to help everyone get through this vast home improvement warehouse. We're currently in the plumbing department, but there seems to be a cart with a pallet of 2x4s turned sideways in the aisle. No one can get through. And don't even try the paint counter. They're going to be bottlenecked there for the next hour at least. You may want to avoid that area and try an alternate route. Are you tired of the long lines at the big box home improvement centers? Come visit the folks at Salina Lumber for all your home improvement needs right here at home. Remember the personal attention you used to get at the old corner store? Well, that same experience still exists at Salina Lumber Company, your local PPG Porter Paints dealer, where you'll find the perfect paint, expertise, product knowledge, and personal service to help you complete any paint job inside and out. Every job deserves PPG Porter Paints, a trusted brand for 90 years. Catch the PPG Porter Paints experience at Salina Lumber Company, where we're so much more than lumber.
Daddy, when are you coming home?
It can be difficult being a service member called for duty. That's why there's the Yellow Ribbon Reintegration Program. We help thousands of National Guard and Reserve members ensure their families are taken care of while they're away.
Daddy, you're home!
And when they return, we help with everything from job opportunities to financial planning. Learn more at yellowribbon.mil. A message from the Department of Defense.
Welcome back, everyone. I just want to remind everyone that once again, we are coming to you live and in living color on your radio dial here at WVFB FM 101.5 Kicks Country. And getting on with our show today, we have Wanda Daniels here with us, and she's going to talk about the election coming up, and I think she has some explanation on the four amendments that are coming up. I know a lot of times folks, when these things are used, they're down at the end of the ballot, and they come down there, and a lot of people either just go through and they'll mark them all yes or mark them all no or something like that, but there are some, these things are fairly important, and I know if you've been watching your TV, you know that some of them are a little controversial, but if you would please, if you want to explain those to the voters a little bit and let them know exactly what they're talking about.
A lot of people don't understand this, and I guess they write them up in a way that for you not to understand them. I don't know. But anyway, many people have asked me about this, and here's a very simple, understandable guide that will help you through this. Amendment 1, if you vote no, now this is, if you vote no on Amendment 1, you are saying that you think there should be fewer restrictions on abortions and that abortion clinics do not need to be licensed or inspected. In addition, you believe late-term partial birth abortions need fewer restrictions. And if you vote yes on Amendment 1, you are saying that they should regulations on abortions such as license requirements for abortion facilities and stopping late-term partial birth abortions. That's Amendment 1.
Okay, on Amendment 1, if you vote yes, you really aren't voting to change anything, are you?
No, just...
You're voting to give the legislature the power to make changes.
Yeah, but it's mostly if you vote yes, it's you're saying that you'll give them more power to regulate
the clinics. Right, so the amendment itself is not really changing the abortion laws, rules, or regulations.
It's just making requirements of better facilities and
That they could pass.
Yes. Now, Amendment 2, if you vote no on Amendment 2, you are saying that the people of Tennessee should be able to vote and choose the Tennessee Supreme Court Justice. Now, that's Amendment 2. If you vote no on that, you're saying that the people of Tennessee will be able to vote and choose the Tennessee Supreme Justice. Now, if you vote yes on Amendment 2, you are saying that the governor should have the right to appoint the Tennessee Supreme Court along with the legislative approving of these choices.
Okay, that's pretty simple, isn't it?
Yes.
You know, I think that these are, of course, based upon our national Supreme Court. In the federal Supreme Court, a Supreme Court justice is appointed for good behavior, which means they can only be removed if they do something pretty terrible. But in Tennessee, we want to give the voters a little bit more choice on that. And I think it has been a thing in the past that either a judge was appointed and then the voters could either keep them or let them go. And it's actually become more of a problem or more of a question in the past few years since politics, even in the state of Tennessee, where for so many years we were a one-party state, that it really wasn't a political question. And now, of course, everything now is becoming a political question. So this will help clarify that one way or the other.
Yes, and like I said, if you vote no on this amendment, the people has the right to choose the Supreme Court. They'll be the ones that
the judges will be running for election.
Yes, yes. Now, Amendment 3, if you vote no on Amendment 3, you are saying that you believe Tennessee needs eventually get a state income tax. If you vote yes on Amendment 3, you are saying that Tennessee should never have a state income tax. So,
and that's pretty cut and dry, isn't it?
That's pretty simple. But now, when they go to the polls to vote, it really won't say that on the ballot.
Right.
It'll be in a way that you will not understand, but... Right now, I've got pamphlets of this to pass out to everybody that wants to come vote, that wants to know about the four amendments. And Amendment 4, if you vote no, you do not believe the veterans organizations should be able to have charitable gaming events one time a year to raise money to help our local vets. Now, if you vote yes, you do believe that veterans organizations should be able to have a charitable gaming event so that they could better assist our local veterans.
Okay, now this is for nonprofits. Really, what's saying nonprofits
yes.
should be allowed to hold a lottery or
yes.
a giveaway or something.
Yes.
And, of course, this, once again, would be regulated by the state. It wouldn't open the state up. Of course, we always hear a thing, you know, that we first thing we know, we'll just have gambling on every corner. No, it doesn't do
no,
those things.
No, don't mean that.
Okay, now, also, there's a lot of people, I don't think, understand the procedure for an amendment to pass. The number of votes. This is not just if you win, is it?
No. You've got to have 50% of votes for the governor plus one for this to pass.
So this is a year that we have a governor running for election,
yes.
and, of course, sometimes something that goes into these things, too, is, I guess, whichever side you're on this thinks it might be a good year either to get it passed if they're not passed because the governor, it's not going to be a really heavily opposed governor's race, and they
no.
think the numbers will be low. And I think, of course, there's always this thing, you know, well, come out and vote how you feel on the amendment, but don't vote for the governor, so you're really maybe casting two votes. So the lower the votes you get in the governor's race and the more you can get to vote for your amendment, the better chance it has passing. I know I saw a thing in the Cookville paper the other day where they had a meeting to try to clarify to people that that really wasn't what was happening, that you go in there and you cast one vote and it'll count two on the machine. So
that's not that way.
And in our races, I know we have a governor, we have a senator running.
Yeah, we have a United States senator.
And
then we have the Congress.
We have our
state senator and state representative.
And we also have to replace a commissioner.
Yes, the 4th District commissioner to be replaced with them.
So we do have one local race.
Yes.
And early voting has started.
It started yesterday.
And you can come down to the community center.
Yes. From 9 o'clock till 12, and we're out for lunch from 12 to 1 and then to 4 o'clock, and that'll be every day. And then on Saturday, we'll be open from 9 o'clock till 12 o'clock, and it will go on through August the 30th. October the 30th.
And, well, most elections are August. We think about that first, don't we? And also then the national election will be coming up November the 4th. So everyone needs to remember that. And let me ask one more question. How many polling places do we have in Clay County? Now, right off the top of your head.
We have 5 districts, but we have 7 precincts.
So
there's really 7 polling places.
And which districts have more than one?
District 4 and 5 have 2 each.
Okay.
And the other 3 just has 1.
Golly, I remember we used to have voting places all over.
Yes.
Of course, that's back in the day when you could walk to vote, wasn't
it? Yeah, it was, and I think they kind of downsized all that.
Done
away with some of the precincts and voting places.
And those are scattered out through the county, and I know... the way the county's district, some folks do have to drive a little farther than others, but it's not really, you know, voting should never be considered any kind of inconvenience anyway. That is our freedom, and that is what ensures our freedom.
And like I said, you've got 15 days of early voting, so everybody can come down to the community center and vote like that and get that done.
All right, I appreciate it, and I hope we've cleared up some of the smoke screen about the amendments.
So.
And, you know, that simple yes or no is not necessarily a simple yes or no, and just getting a majority of votes in these really doesn't matter. You've got to, like you said, have the 50% plus one.
In the governor,
not in the entire election,
but just in the governor's race.
All right, Wanda, it's been a pleasure having you here again this morning.
It's been a pleasure being here.
It's always fun having you here, and we know there's something exciting going on in the county. This thing will really heat up your own TV in the next few weeks. There'll be money spent from everywhere coming in the state of Tennessee. Thanks again for being here.
Oh, you're welcome.
Okay, right now we'll take a short break. After I do a little bit more house cleaning here. Of course, we do. This is our birthday and anniversary club day here in the Clay County Corner. And here toward the end of the program, we'll be giving away an ice cream cake to the lucky winner of this week's birthday cake. And we've got, I think, about 10 or so names on the list here this morning, 10 or 11 different things where they'll have a chance to win a cake. And we'll be doing that here in a little bit. I want to remind everyone, too, to make sure they get out to the Dairy Queen, patronize the folks out there, and go by and get you a good lunch or a good breakfast, or come by in the afternoon for a crispy chicken salad or something like that. And just sit down and have a good time there at the Dairy Queen. Look like Sheriff Boone's walking through the door, and we'll get him on here in a minute after we do a little bit of making money for this outfit. So we do need to make a little money so we can stay on the air. But we'll be back just in a minute after these words from our sponsor.
As we grow older, aging can present emotional and behavioral problems that often go undetected or ignored. But this is not a part of the normal aging process. Senior Care Unit, located at Cumberland River Hospital in Salina, Tennessee, is devoted to helping older adults and their families deal with these changes. The Senior Care Unit provides a comprehensive approach with a highly skilled staff to pave the way for coping with these difficulties. Referrals to Senior Care can come from anyone at any time. Don't suffer alone. Senior Care is there to help your family when you need them most. For more information or to make a referral, please call 1-800-777-8553 or 931-243-5265.
Back here on WVFB FM 101.5 Kicks Country with the Clay County Coroner this morning. And next guest is Sheriff Brandon Boone. And he's come in, going to give us just a little bit of rundown what's going on in the law enforcement business. And of course, one of the big things coming up right now is Halloween. And I know it's kind of a nuisance for them. I don't think, you know, they usually. This point in time, we don't have people going out and doing all kinds of vandalism like we did at one time, but it is kind of a nuisance and an aggravation for them. I do know that. And, Brandon, some safety rules for folks for Halloween, some of the things that you all expect citizens to do during this little time of celebration.
Okay. Thanks this morning, Thomas, for having me up here. The Halloween is a great time of the year to go out with the children and have fun, but there is some safety concerns that we have, especially here in town after dark. It's tradition, kids are buy eggs and throw them, and it's been a problem in the past, and it gets out of hand, and you know, they're throwing eggs at good vehicles, causing vandalism and damage to them vehicles.
Iodine does go through paint, doesn't it?
It does, and we definitely encourage people not to do that, and there is laws against that. The city, I believe there's an article in the paper this week that the city is going to try to start cracking down on that, because it has really become a problem in the past, and people get upset, and there's been arguments and fights in the streets after their vehicle gets hit with an egg or a paintball, or in the years past, it's even been rocks or items like that. So, safety for the kids is their number one concern. There's a lot of people on the road at that time of the evening trying to get the kids to the houses to get some candy. So, and for the parents, you know, there is a curfew law now in Salina. I couldn't tell you right now the times, but the city does have a curfew. And, you know, they're going to enforce that this year. So parents need to find out what time your kids are supposed to be home and make them be home.
All right. Thanks, Brandon, for that. You probably didn't expect me to throw that at you right off the bat, but tell us about the sheriff in business right now.
Thomas, we're very busy as a sheriff's department, and we have a large volume of calls. You know, it relates anywhere from unlocking vehicles to doing extra patrols in certain areas of the county. We have vandalisms, we have thefts. We're constantly trying to solve some of them cases. And, you know, you'll never have a crime-free community, completely crime-free, but we are striving to be a better law enforcement agency to serve the people of the county. And the drugs is drugs are everywhere, and drugs will always be here. It's just a matter of trying to get a hold of it.
You know, it looks like, you know, with the crystal meth problem, I haven't heard anything on the Nashville News report. You know, usually there's somebody's house blows up every so often with this kind of thing, and it seems like there's, you know, pushes every so many months, from like the folks in Nashville, the state troopers that you know, we try to have a little period of eradication. Then it seems like on the state level, it kind of backs up a little bit, and it doesn't. If they're doing things, I guess, that don't receive a lot of publicity.
It is, and as far as it goes, the state level and federal level, there is time periods that that you do try to enforce, especially on the state roads. There's different campaigns, they call it, to try to make them wear their seatbelts or slow people down, drinking and driving campaigns. The methamphetamine problem is, our numbers are not here like they were a year or two ago. We just don't have the, I'm not saying we don't have it, it's just we're not making an arrest or that they have eliminated some processes of trying to buy the pseudoephedrine. There's a limit now, and that really helps us. The problem we're having now is prescription drugs. If the meth problem does come back, we've run into a problem because the federal funding has ceased starting in December of this year.
You know, and Brendan, it seems like, too, that a lot of these folks at one time or another did have a legitimate need for some of the things that they're now what we call hooked on, that sometimes it starts out with an innocent type thing, and it snowballs, doesn't it?
It does. The large majority of the people that are either selling or hooked on prescription drugs, it does start from either a serious accident or an injury that does need some medication, but they just get dependent on it, and also they look at the money that they can make from it, and then, you know, it's there is a huge profit that can be made there from selling their narcotics, but it is against the law, and we'll try to catch you if they're doing it.
Well, Brendan, with the economics the way they are, do you think we'll ever be able to clamp down on limiting prescription drugs and things like that? Because, you know, that we know it's a multi-billion dollar business on a national level, international level, and any time seems like you try to just tighten just a little bit that you would think you'd really turn the tourniquet on their neck, wouldn't you?
Yes, and I believe this year you're going to see this upcoming legislation session, you're going to see some new legislation on prescription drugs. The governor has announced that, you know, this is one of the top priorities, prescription drugs. The Upper Cumberland has one of the highest opiate users, hydrocodone. And, you know, the Tennessee has passed some laws to where a doctor in the ER can only prescribe so many days of narcotics without having to go see their regular physician to get a narcotic prescription filled for a longer period of time. So,
And of course, those folks scream they don't have the money to pay for the doctor.
Yes. And, you know, the one thing that does scare me, though, Thomas, is if we do get some regulations with the prescription drugs, the opiates, the barbiturates, and all the other problems that we're having, the opiate, the heroin, is going to make a big rise. And we're already seeing in our surrounding counties, and actually we got heroin and cocaine here in Clay County the other day. So it's here, and if they put a squeeze on the prescription drugs, we're going to see an increase in heroin here.
Well, Brendan, do you think it might warn folks a little bit better if, you know, they have the prescription name there, like I said, for your oxycodone or some of those things, and then right after it, great big letters, it says heroin, it says morphine. You know, something that people are familiar with. You know, a lot of people, you know, they think, well, you know, this is a prescription pill. This is really not dope. You know, this is a prescription. But most of those things that you said are heroin-based, morphine-based, that type thing. And they are dangerous, dangerous drugs.
They are, very much so. And you know, labeling them a little better, and maybe the doctors explaining to these people that, hey, this is an addictive drug. You do need to watch this. And another thing we have a problem with is every prescription drug that is a narcotic will have a label on it that specifically says may cause drowsiness, operating vehicles or vessels or machinery or stuff, and be cautious. And people think that just because they have a prescription, that means that they're okay to drive, and that's not always the case. They can very much get impaired by just taking a normal dose of their prescription.
Okay, let's take a little short break, and then we want to come back and do just a little review on the Sheriff's Department, maybe the personnel you have, some of the needs that you have, maybe the number of calls you make. I think you may have those statistics there in front of you somewhere or another, and spend a few minutes on that. But right now, let's take a short commercial break, and Sheriff Boone will be back with us just here in a few minutes.
Hello, this is Paula Boone with Salina Health and Rehabilitation Center. We are excited to announce two new services available to our community. We are now offering adult daycare and outpatient therapies. Our adult daycare program is designed to provide improvements in the health of adults who may just need a safe place to be during the day. Nutritious meals, snacks, activities, and a full-service beauty shop are just a few of the services available. Outpatient physical, occupational, and speech therapies are now offered to our community as well. Most major insurance plans are accepted. For more information, give us a call today at 931-243-3139. We will be glad to assist you. Again, that is 931-243-3139, Salina Health and Rehabilitation Center in Salina, Tennessee.
Welcome back, everyone. We're sitting here with Sheriff Brandon Boone, and we've got a couple of questions, a couple of things we wanted to talk about. I know some of the things we folks in Clay County are learning is stop at four-way stops and wear your seat belts. And, you know, most people think, you know, that, well, that's just a nuisance that that they're placing on us. You know, we really don't have to stop every time, do we? But I think they're learning that they might ought to be stopping, don't you think?
Yes, that's correct, Thomas. You know, we have four-way stops here, and, you know, I think years in past people just sort of done like a rolling stop, and, you know, it's a small community, and there ain't nobody at the intersection. I can just go on through. But we do have a higher increase in calls across the county, which we have to have the officers. So there's more officers' presence out there, including the Highway Patrol.
I think that the new four-way stop out by between the hospital and the Dairy Queen, I think it kind of opened a lot of folks' eyes up that, you know, this is a dangerous thing. I know we had quite a few accidents to begin with when it first opened because people didn't realize what's going on, but I think we do notice if you set the Dairy Queen and have breakfast, you notice most everybody stops now.
Yeah.
And if they don't, that they pay the price.
Yeah, there's usually someone sitting in that area. So we do encourage everybody to make a complete stop.
But they are sitting out in the open where everyone can see them, aren't they?
Yes, they are. There's not very many places to hide right there at the hospital intersection. So.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about the Sheriff's Department. About how many employees?
We have 34 total employees at the Sheriff's Office. That includes your dispatchers for 911, which are / correction officers. That includes your cooks.
Who is your chief cook?
UTM Cherry.
Okay, Tim, a little word in there.
Yeah, yeah, UTM has been with the Sheriff's Office there for a while. And then we have our deputies, our school resource officers, and then we have two court officers currently. Usually there's three. We only have two currently right now. We're constantly having a turnover, Thomas. It's the pay for other departments is more than ours and a better benefit. So we're constantly losing employees.
Okay. When you hire a new deputy, how soon do they have to go to a state training or?
They do. They have to go to the state law enforcement training academy, and they have to be enrolled within 6 months of the date of hire.
And at whose expense?
At the county's.
At the county's expense. So we do pay for training them.
We do. It's $2,500 currently. Beginning January 1, it will go up to $3,000.
So we get a lot of them trained, and they find there's better jobs after we get them trained.
They do.
That's a sad situation. But
we do a contract with them, and it's prorated after they receive their training. And that they'll stay with us for 2 years, but
and if they don't, they have to pay.
Yeah, and sometimes that doesn't faze people. They'll leave anyway just because they're more money other places.
A lot of them make up the difference probably in a couple of months in their salary.
They do.
Okay. How about the number of miles that you might log in a day here in Clay County? Do you have that statistic? Maybe just
we do, and it varies by officers, and it varies by the day itself, the number of calls we have. You know, on an average day, we have two officers and nighttime three deputies. You know, the month of August, for instance, we had 89 911 calls for law enforcement. And in a total of 1,270 CADED calls. And what that means is it could mean unlocking a vehicle. It could mean extra patrol on this certain road. It can mean we have a lot of dog calls, dogs running at large. But our number of calls has increased. People depend on law enforcement for a lot of different things.
Well, you know, a lot of states, a lot of counties have, you know, animal control officers that are separate. I think they're probably separate from the sheriff's department. We don't have that here, but we still have the same laws that everyone else, but so we have to come up with a way to enforce those things.
It's very difficult.
And absolutely, because, you know, most, even the dogs that are loose are someone's pet, and if they have to be, you know, put down or taken away, it's a personal family thing with them, and
yes.
and people's dogs in the country mean a lot to them, don't they?
They do, and traditionally we're a rural area, and people has always let their dogs run, and you know, people that don't enjoy animals, you know, it gets on their nerve, and we get calls. I'm going to say on an average every day of someone's animals running at large, or and whether it be chickens or goats or whatever running at large, they call law enforcement to try to go talk to the neighbor and say, hey, can you keep your animals up?
And I know you said another, I guess, kind of a nuisance call is the locked vehicles. And I do know that in most areas around us now, the local law enforcement people will not unlock a door. They will make you call a locksmith and say, if you lived in Salina, probably the nearest locksmith here is either Baxter or Livingston or somewhere like that. But they're just no longer doing that.
There's a reason why there, Thomas. There's a piece of legislation that if there is a locksmith within your community, that you have to call the locksmith. The law enforcement cannot open in that vehicle unless it's an emergency.
And I wonder what that will, how many mile radius they'll call the community, reckon?
Well, I think it's just within that county.
Within the county. So if there's a locksmith.
If there is a locksmith in Clay County, then the sheriff's department would stop providing that service.
So, young folks, if you're looking for a business to get into and this legislation passes, get into the locksmith business, because you, according to Sheriff Boone, you'd have a bunch of business here.
Yep.
And you would then call them much like you would call record service, wouldn't
yes.
you?
And, there, of course, there's a fee involved in that, too.
There is. Yes, there is. About a $50 standing fee, I think, in most places now. Okay. Sheriff, I know that the job you've been doing the past few years was reflected this year in the local election when you ran unopposed, which was, you know, traditionally unheard of in this county, and which was, you know, I think a tremendous compliment to you and your office.
Well, thank you, Thomas. I just feel blessed that the people of the county has given me this opportunity to serve as the sheriff, and I enjoy it. Yes, there's days it's frustrating and very stressful, but it has been an honor to serve the people of Clay County. It truly has.
Well, it's been an honor and a pleasure having you here this morning, and we want to invite you back. I know we still got some stuff down the road to talk about. We're still, you know, on the burner is the new facility, the new jail, and we're going to get back and we'll talk about that again. But it's been a pleasure having you here this morning, and it's always nice to sit down and talk to you.
Thank you very much.
And we'll be back in just a few minutes with our final guest of the day, and then we'll also be giving away a birthday and anniversary cake, and your name's not on the list. I'm sorry.
Wow. I hate that.
Auto, property, farm, business, life, term, do you have enough coverage? Are you overinsured? Are you paying too much? How do you know what insurance provides the right coverage for you? Well, you can find out by contacting Hugh Davenport at Clay County Farm Bureau in Salina, Tennessee. Hugh Davenport has been helping his friends and neighbors get the insurance they need for 36 years, and he can help you too. He'll make sure you have a full understanding of your needs and get you the coverage that's just right for you. Make sure you're not underinsured or overinsured. Contact Hugh Davenport at Clay County Farm Bureau at 808 East Lake in Salina, Tennessee. Open Monday through Thursday, 8:30 until 4:30, and Fridays until 5. You can call him at 931-243-3181. That's 931-243-3181 for Hugh Davenport at Clay County Farm Bureau in Salina, Tennessee.
We're back. I have with me here now Wildlife Enforcement Officer Bill Moulton. I think we used to call them game wardens, and then they were game and fish specialists, and now it's wildlife, which I think includes just about everything that ain't tame. I know something that we're right in the middle of that, you know, really has nothing to do with game and fish, and that I don't know whether it's closed yet or not, and that is the ginseng season. Welcome, Bill, before I start you off on something. But the ginseng season, is it still going on full blast?
It's still open. Goes into December. It kind of opened up. They changed the season a year ago where it used to open the 15th of August. They've changed it to September the 1st because it is one of those plants that takes a long time to get to the point that it should be legally harvested.
And that's a pretty far little industry here in the county, isn't it?
Yeah.
A lot of people make some extra money on that.
Well, unfortunately, the last few years, it got as high as $817 a pound dried last year. And there was a lot of trespassing, digging without permission, and digging before season, that type of thing. In fact, we had one of the buyers was broken into and had 11 pounds of ginseng stolen from him last year.
That's a pretty good chunk of...
Yeah, it is.
Well, what is the season based on?
The season is based on when the berries or the seed should be ripe to the point that they are viable for when somebody digs a root. They can replant those seeds in that immediate area under the leaves into the soil. And, of course, now any of those folks that dig know that about to lose the leaves, they've yellowed up, and it's going to be a lot harder to locate. But it goes on into December to give those folks the ability to dry the root, clean and dry the root, and then... kind of wait around to see how the prices go up and down.
Okay, and that this season is the only time that you can buy or sell also. Is that correct?
Legally, yes.
I meant legally, that there's a window on the market. Yep. It's not where you can, you know, dig a bunch during season and then 2 months later after the season closes, take it to a legitimate dealer and sell it.
Right, that's correct.
Okay, and I know that is a problem for you also. And you said a licensed dealer?
Right.
They are licensed by the game and
well,
fish wildlife.
Well, that's actually by Tennessee Department of Environment and Conservation is who licensed them.
Okay, so it's a different department. So you're enforcing for them.
Yep.
Okay, now we've got that kind of cleared up a little bit. I know we had a question about bears a minute ago. They are drifting down out of Big South Fork, aren't they?
They are. For the last several years, we've had transients come through in the spring and in the fall, is normally when we see them here. We did have a couple individuals back out towards Standing Stone that continued to report that there was one that hung around year-round for 2 to 3 years. But, as little as a week ago, we had an individual that... observed one, they estimated probably around 400 pounds out in the Union Hill area.
And I believe you also said, and we were just having our little conversation a minute ago, that a couple of the counties in the neighboring counties now have a bear hunting season?
This year they opened up a new zone in Fentress, Pickett, Morgan, and Scott counties. And it's an archery only season, but I believe. Fentress County, I think, had six tagged, Morgan County had 4 or 5 tagged. Scott County had 6 or 7 tagged, and Pickett County, I believe, had 1. So those were all resident bears for the most part, in the sense that that's how they finally got the season built there.
Okay, and when was this season? Is the season now, or is it earlier? Or
it started September the 20th. End of September, and it's going now. I think it ends here end of this week.
Okay, is it a bisex?
Yes. Yeah.
Male only?
No. Oh. No. You can kill a sow, but any sow with a cub, it's just like the other bear regulations. You're not supposed to take that.
Okay, so the maturity of the cub has something to do with
it. It does, and honestly, I don't remember how it was supposed to.
Hey, I stumped you.
Hey, you did. I didn't read my regs, did I? But no, there is a maturity type
reg. Okay, I'm not sure of that either, but I saw that somewhere or another.
It is in the book. I can tell you that.
And you better know it.
Yep. Before you
even
go.
If Bill doesn't know it, you better know it.
Well, I'll look at the book before I go. So,
okay. What about have we had any other changes in this area in our regulations?
Nothing that should impact us. We've got the fall turkey season going on right now, which, even though it's during the archery season, you are allowed to take a turkey with a shotgun. You can't have your archery equipment with you or have anyone with you with archery equipment.
And we're talking about archery for deer.
Yes, archery for deer.
And that season is open now.
That season is open.
What about juveniles?
Okay, we got that coming up at the end of this month, the last Saturday of October, 25th and 26th, be the juvenile season. And they actually, in Unit A, which Clay County is in, and get quite a few deer during that season. That's only 1 buck per day, but the kids should have a pretty good time. Lots of acorns on the ground right now, so the deer haven't really gotten into a good pattern yet. But with it cooling off like it is, it just probably roll in right about the time juvenile.
And this past few days, they could probably pick them out of the air, couldn't they? when they came bowing by.
Yeah.
Okay, now, juvenile hunt, the regulations for a juvenile hunter, the classes.
Okay. Yeah, once an individual turns 10 years of age, if they want to hunt, they are supposed to complete a hunter safety course somewhere. Now, we've had both of ours. We normally have ours. We allow a week after school starts before we start the first class. I think there's one other computer class that has a field day that they could try and complete and be there at the Livingston PD. 5 minutes left. But they'd probably have to call the office check on that. But anyway.
Okay, and are there any other game seasons open right now?
Squirrel season's open.
Okay, I thought it was still open.
Grouse season's open. Of course, we're not in part of the open season for grouse, and I've not heard any drumming in the spring for a couple of years. But, we've got rabbit and quail season coming up. The 1st of November is when that opens. And then our muzzleload season opens up the 8th of November and runs all the way through the 21st. And 21st and 22nd is when the first part of duck season opens. So
you're,
a lot of stuff happening.
You're going to be busy.
It's picked up. Yep.
And, okay, in this area that we're in, how many officers do we have in this area now?
Total.
Mm-hmm.
You've got 2 here in Clay County, 2 in Overton County, 1 in Pickett, and then 1 in Jackson. There's a wildlife management area manager for down on Cordell Hole that has enforcement capabilities. And then there's guys come in to help us from other counties, from Putnam, Cumberland County, Morgan Ventress at different times.
So we are, you know, we have, like I said, the deer, we have usually a plentiful crop of squirrels, the turkey. I know anyone that wants to drive between here and Moss can look over toward the Proctor Creek on about any given day and see anywhere from 2 to 3 dozen turkeys in a flock over there. Right now, we are blessed with a plentiful amount of game here in Clay County.
We're doing well.
And I know we had a little problem with our smallmouth bass, but I think they're on their way back. But, you know, it seems like these things kind of run in rotation. I know this was an off year for the smallmouth, but all the fishermen I've talked to said it's been a bounteous year for the largemouth.
Yeah.
They've caught a bunch of big largemouth this year.
Yeah, and it's, like you said, it, kind of cyclic. And if you remember when we first went into the smallmouth regs back in the early 90s, a few years into that, our largemouth population kind of dropped off. Our spotted bass stayed about. I think our largemouth population's come back.
Okay. Bill, I hate that we've run a little bit short of time this morning, and it's taken me a couple, 3 weeks to get you on, but I'd like to come back again with you here in a couple of weeks and when we get a little bit deeper into the deer season. And I know you and I could sit here and probably talk for the full hour, and I don't know where everyone else would enjoy it or not, but I'm sure that we would. But right now, I have very quickly got to do a birthday and anniversary clip, and if you will give me a number between 1 and 10, they will be the lucky winner of today's birthday and anniversary cake.
Well, let's go with lucky 7.
All right, I'm going to circle that. Okay, and I'll announce that here in a minute. You can sit here a few minutes if you want to we conclude, or I'm going to get started real quick. Our birthday and anniversary is this week. The first one, we have a birthday for Ronnie Short, and also at the front of the message got clipped on that, and there's a Short family that I guess Ronnie is related to that's celebrating an anniversary this week. So we lost the names of them, but the Short part did come in, and we'd like to wish them both a happy birthday and a happy anniversary. And then we have Lexi Kirk, and I guess it was her great-grandmother that called in, wanted to wish her a happy birthday. And Carly Wilt's grandmother wanted to wish her a happy birthday. And then also we have Bobby Joe Davis, who is celebrating a birthday this week. And then Weltha Strong, on the 16th of this month, will be celebrating her 87th birthday. And this is from her friends, family, and the folks at the Moss Church of Christ. They all like to wish her a happy birthday today, or the 16th. And we have Lene Cunningham on the 13th. Teresa Gass. Happy birthday from her mother-in-law. And then also, I guess, a lifetime friend of Wealthy Strong, Nola Cherry, is celebrating her 87th birthday on the 15th. And this is from Barbara Hale and all the folks at the Union Hill Church of Christ. And they would also like to wish Joanne and Lloyd Walden a happy anniversary. And then the last one we have today, Homer and Haley Smith, want to wish their Nana a happy birthday, but they didn't give us her name. And I just asked Officer Moulton to give me a number between 1 and 10, and he said he thought 7 was a good number, and that is a good number for Teresa Gass. She just won a birthday anniversary club cake from the Salina Dairy Queen. And also want to real quickly remind you to call 243-5574. That's the number of the answering machine here. Speak slowly, clearly, and hesitate just a few seconds before you start your message so we don't clip any of it off at the front. And once again, it's been a pleasure being here with you this morning on the Clay County Corner. And may the good Lord bless and keep you till we meet again.
Tri-County Electric offers our member owners several free options to make paying your electric bill a little easier. Bank draft means never having a late charge. Your bank account will be drafted on the actual date your bill is due. Due date selection allows you to choose what the date is, a date convenient for you, because sometimes a day or two makes a difference. Levelized billing is a rolling 12-month average, keeping the larger winter and summer bills from a budget. Contact your local Tri-County Electric office for more details. Tri-County Electric, owned and operated by those we serve.
Thanks for being with us today for the Clay County Corner on Kix Country. We thank all of our interesting guests, and we thank all of our fine sponsors. Our sponsors take pride in and care about our community. So when the need arises, make sure you visit them. Or just give them a call and tell them thanks for sponsoring the Clay County Corner. So until next Thursday morning at 9, we hope you have a great week.